The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning. It is A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the house here at the South Point Hotel Casino, where the humidity is 100% and the humiture, well, it feels like it's 1,000 degrees. I believe that's what the humiture is, what it feels like. We are playing hurt again in here. We'll get through it.
I've never heard that word. Humiture?
Humiture. That's a DC thing.
Humiture.
Yeah. All the weathermen. By the way, why does no one track records of weather people? Why do we not
it's
get...
it's the greatest job in the world.
Why do we not get like an Excel spreadsheet on the local weather people to see who is best at this? What do you think the highest percentage of accurate forecasts are? It depends on the market, I guess.
I have no idea, but having worked in local news in South Florida,
it's horrible.
All I know is the big money guys go there. The big money guys go there because if you got hurricane tracking or anything to do, you're in one of those markets.
Right, but like the accuracy of some of the weather forecasts, 50%? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I think it's probably even less than that.
Yeah, probably so. That's what I'm saying.
Because, like, what do they actually predict? A chance? They predict a chance of rain, and depending on where you're standing, that percentage might
be
or not.
Yes, yeah. Depends how you grade. That's true. How do we get on this? Oh, humiture. Anywho, we got a show today. It's not going to be about weather. I promise you that. Raheem Palmer will join us, co-host of the East Coast Bias on the Ringer gambling show. Raheem will be here to talk some Errol Spence Jr. Terrence Crawford fight of the year. We had Teddy Atlas on yesterday, courtesy of the crack man, Bill Krakenberger. And Teddy, I have bet what he sort of suggested, Kelly. I have Teddy's opinion on this was he loves both fighters. If I can do a synopsis of it, he loves both fighters, as everyone does. They're both undefeated. This is a fight that has been in the making for years. Errol Spence had a car accident during his career, probably delayed this further. Terrence Crawford is a minus 150 favorite right now. Pretty consensus on the minus 150 right now. That's up from about minus 135 consensus where it opened. And the total is 10 and a half rounds. Teddy Atlas's take on this was both fighters are great. Crawford, 35 years old. Errol Spence Jr., 33. But in the end, while they, you know, Spence Jr. is the southpaw, Terrence Crawford can fight both ways. And in the end, Teddy's key point was that Crawford can figure things out as it goes, that no matter what happens in the fight, Crawford is a great problem solver, I'll paraphrase. And I like that from Teddy Atlas. Good enough for me. I am on Terrence Crawford. I sort of lean that way to begin with, but that was when I needed to make a bet on it. I did so. The other thing that Teddy talked about was he's going to take a flyer on the under, 10 and a half rounds. The under is heavily, you know, you get good bang for your buck on the under. The over 10 and a half rounds is heavily juiced. I got plus 220 something on the under. It's about plus 200 right now. Still a nice price. One of those bets that I think you have to be willing to make, and even if you lose, you're like, no, I'm good, you know. It was still the right bet to make because that's a big number for what Teddy described as two guys that could take out the other at any point. And he really feels like Crawford's power is sort of underrated in this because Spence is the bigger guy. So people just assume Spence is the guy with the power, Spence Jr. And the other thing I quoted yesterday when we had Crackman in here was I listened to Roy Jones Jr. and Sean Porter talk about this. Sean Porter, who fought both guys. Sean Porter's opinion was, you know, if I had all the money in the world, if I had to make one bet on it, I would take Terrence Crawford. He got beat by both split decision against Errol Spence Jr., TKO against Terrence Crawford. He said he'll take Crawford. And Roy Jones Jr. likened this. For those who think, well, the total, the over-under, it'll probably go the distance. Roy Jones's counter to that was this, he felt, reminded him of his fight with James Toney back in the day. When it wasn't a Pacquiao Mayweather situation where they were past their primes. They were in it still. They wanted to show the world who the top dog was at the time. He relates that to this. And so he thinks, actually, that if it goes sort of with inaction for any prolonged period of time, the crowd will sort of egg on that action. But that really, Spence and Crawford won't require that. They want to mix it up. So I'll take the under at plus 223 or whatever my number was exactly. We have it. I'll check exactly what the cent, what it is to the cent, but it was in the 220s. But you can get it above 200. Cracks point yesterday was he wanted to take a sprinkle on the draw because you know how boxing goes. 229 was my number. He is, because you know how boxing goes, was his point. They really want, if you're a boxing conspiracy theorist, and those of us who have bet boxing in the past, we've all gotten burned, right? I vowed after the second Triple G Canelo fight, I'm never betting this again. Well, here I am finally getting back into it. But, you know, his take was, what's the narrative? What's the outcome that most, you know, pushes this along? And so he said maybe a sprinkle on the draw, although he said, in all fairness, I don't think he had bet that yet. But Lou Finocchiaro mentioned they already have it in the contract that there's an automatic rematch here before the end of the year. So I didn't bet any of the draw. My plays are Terrence Crawford minus 150 and Crawford Spence Jr. under 10.5 at plus 229. You can still get it north of $2. One tennis play left today, Laura Sigmund. I got it minus 132 against Stefanini. I think Sigmund is by far the better player here. Minus 132 was a nice price. It has gone up to minus 150, though. So I wouldn't play it any higher than like minus 140. And I know people are going to override that and play it anyway, but that would be my recommendation on that. So that's the one tennis play, Laura Sigmund, although they're having weather in Warsaw. So I know Iga's playing today. They're all sort of delayed at this point. The big news yesterday, the big thing that happened in sports, on the heels of Tom Verducci, he was the first person that said, hey, or the first person that reported, Shohei's not getting traded. We said on this show all along, never thought he'd get traded. You can reverse engineer that if you want and say, yeah, well, Gil, well, the Angels did really well. That's why they didn't trade him. I was steadfast in it. I was like, even if they had a 500 record, even if they were a little below 500, they would have kept Shohei. The only way they would have traded him is that they just completely had cratered, which did not happen. And Shohei goes out yesterday, Kelly, and in his own way says, yep, good decision. Look at me now. Shohei Ohtani yesterday in a doubleheader throws a complete game, a one-hit shutout against the Detroit Tigers and follows that up in game two with not one, but two dingers, which again, let's just say, is Shohei doing things that no one has ever done before. In fact, with that performance, Ohtani became the first player ever to throw a shutout in one leg of a doubleheader, then hit a home run in the second. He's the first player to throw a shutout and hit two home runs on the same day since Sonny Siebert did it in 1971. You remember that, Kelly. Sonny Siebert did that in the same game. And then he's the first player with a one-hitter and two homers on the same day since Rick Wise went deep twice in his no-hitter for the Phillies earlier in 1971 against the Reds, which I know you remember very well as well.
I did. I had to pause and think a bit when I heard the one you just read of, like, he's one of five players to hit, what was it, a complete game shutout and two home runs on the same day, but he's the first to do it in a doubleheader. I was like, wait, so there's four other guys that have done this before in a single game?
Yeah, it's confusing. He's the only one that's done it in a doubleheader where it was, you know, a shutout in one as a pitcher, right, two homers in the other. Or really, to be accurate about it, he's the first player ever to throw a shutout in one and hit one home run in the second leg, but he's the first player to throw a shutout and hit two homers on the same day since Sonny Siebert, and he's the first player with a one-hitter and two homers on the same day since Rick Wise. So I just want to bring this up because, you know, we do this with politics, we do this with sports. Things get normalized very quickly in our brains, right? Things that are just so out of bounds, and then we live through it, and then it just becomes normal. I don't ever want to let this happen with Shohei. And he won the MVP, and we were all over it that year. And let's not take that for granted either, because you remember there were different opinions on this at the time. Like, what we think is, of course, everybody had him for MVP. Ended up being a minus, whatever. Yeah, we had, you remember the opposite opinion that was stated on this network, Kelly, was all the way, like, if he was from Iowa, he wouldn't even be in the top 10 in the voting. Let's not forget that ridiculous statement, right? So not everybody was on board with the greatness of this guy. He is so spectacular. I'm so glad the Angels didn't get rid of him. They're only three games out of a wild card position right now. And I would love to see them get to the postseason, and then I would love to see this get parlayed into the Angels keeping him. And for Artie Moreno, for everybody who was criticizing him, and yes, again, mechanically, was this the right baseball thing to do? No, not technically, but it's Shohei, and you can't turn your back on your fan base and get rid of a player of this caliber. You can't, because otherwise, what are we doing? So yeah, they risk losing him for a song this offseason, but you know what? Sometimes real life gets in the way. And so from a betting standpoint, yeah, MVP, you can't put enough zeros on it. He's going to be the MVP. I would imagine if he didn't play anymore, he's still the MVP in the American League. For those curious about that performance yesterday as a pitcher, Tom Tango's Cy Young tracker that we talked about earlier in the week, Kelly, he's sixth by that in the American League. Again, would folks actually vote for him for both MVP and Cy Young? That's a different conversation. But at least on Tom Tango's Cy Young tracker, he's sixth. If he has one or two more of those kinds of performances, let's say he gives you another two-hit shutout, complete game, another one-hitter, whatever it is, I think that discussion becomes a lot more interesting. And then does it make you want to bet the Angels in any way? I would still say no to that latter comment. But I just want to take a moment again, because it took him less than 90 minutes to throw that one-hit shutout and hit the first homer yesterday.
It was incredible.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's just silly. It's just silly.
He leads the major leagues in home runs, 38, total bases, 258, triples, 7. Remember, Jim Rice, the last player in 1978, to lead the major leagues in both home runs and triples. He leads the majors in OPS, 1.070, OPS plus, slugging, war. He also leads up all pitchers in hits, of course, He also leads all pitchers in hits allowed per 9 innings, 5.9, opponents batting average, 185, shutout just the 15th thrown by a pitcher this year. Good on the Angels. Then they added, of course, Lucas Giolito. Now, as right as we are about that, it will be fascinating to see what the Padres are actually going to do, because I didn't think there was any chance they would get rid of Blake Snell or Josh Hader. That remains to be seen. 4 days away from the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Speaking of baseball, we'll take a look at the odds in both the AL West, the Angels AL West, and the AL East on the other side. See if there's a bet to be made. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. And start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM, state-of-the-art technology, and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Off air, we're having a Nelly jam session going on in here. How did we get on Nelly this morning?
Oh, man. Good question. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin brought it up. He brought up
Kevin
Batter Up.
Kevin Kev shows up for the first day this week and he immediately sidetracks us.
He brought up like one of the most random Nelly songs ever. And then, yeah, I've just been playing the hits.
So the question becomes, if you could only have one Nelly song for the rest of eternity, you can't listen to any other, which is what's the answer?
All right. It's probably Country Grammar for me, but I'm really glad I just pulled up Grills because I forgot how great of a song this was.
Kevin
Kev. Let me see your what?
I'm going to go Dilemma, but that's sort of cheating, the one with Kelly Rowland, because that's really a Patti LaBelle song. But, you know, there's my choice. Anyway, we'll take all callers at 1-800-WHATEVER. It's like 106 KML jams in here.
Moreno's just singing in my ear now. I'm just going to give out his phone number one day. Call in here.
Give Roberto Moreno on this. So we were talking about Shohei yesterday, or as Kelly says, Shohei. And it's just what we're seeing is it's beyond Babe Ruth at this point. Right, his numbers, his career numbers stack up both pitching and batting at this point in his career very favorably to the great Babe Ruth. What about the Angels, who again, in the, this is Artie Moreno's hope, obviously, and every Angels backer's hope that they get to the postseason and can actually make some noise. Can they win the division? A division where the Texas Rangers right now still clinging to a 2-game lead over the Houston Astros. By the way, let me just say this. 5 out of baseball's 6 divisions, second place team within 3 games of first place, 4 out of 6 divisions within 2. And this being one of them, the Astros, who took 2 of 3 from the Rangers this past week. So it looked like it was going to be, if they could have pulled off the sweep, that would have been something. But the Rangers still holding them off. Remaining strength of schedule we have on the screen as well. And again, with 60 games or 55 to 60 games left in the regular season, it's kind of incremental strength of schedule, but the Angels do have the toughest by far the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So the Angels, who are 6 out of the division lead, they got to play an aggregate win percentage of 517. That's the 6th hardest remaining schedule in all of baseball. I'm not even going to bring up the Mariners, who are 7.5 back, who have the 3rd easiest schedule for the rest of baseball, because the Mariners just offensively are such a disappointment this year. Julio Rodriguez being sort of the poster child of that. I don't think the Angels ultimately have enough offense. Like, I don't trust them offensively to get here to the promised land, despite the acquisition of Lucas Giolito on the hill. I just don't trust them offensively. The Astros are doing this without Yordan, really. And the fact that they're able to remain this close to the Rangers throughout, with Alex Bregman sort of, you know, picking up the slack, with Kyle Tucker having a great year, I still think the Astros are the team that's going to win this division. And this coming from a guy who my only season win total this year, pre-flop, was the Rangers over. Because for all the indicators I had, this was the over of all overs.
Yeah, you really liked them.
Loved them. Yeah. Because of Pythagorean theorem, because of base runs, because of record in close games. So the Rangers, to me, had all the indicators. They were adding DeGrom. Now, admittedly, Nathan Eovaldi sort of took the Jacob DeGrom role. But I think the Astros ultimately are going to nip them at the buzzer, if you will. And I think, by the way, in baseball, that is a monster thing, right? You got the two teams that get the byes, and then you got the other four that have got to play a first round series.
Right.
So it's huge. And we talked about this last year when I made all those Braves bets, 17 Braves bets and plus money down the stretch to beat the Mets, which at the time people were like, there's no way this is going to happen. It did happen, and then the Mets quickly perished, if you will, in the in the postseason. Didn't get to a championship series even. So it's really the difference between baseball's regular season and then the postseason. Obviously, all postseasons are quote unquote a different season, but in baseball, you go 162 games to determine the outcome of your standings, only to just get the cruelest of endings in a quick postseason series.
I think just more general questions. So like this was, I think even just over the past month, as I've been checking out these markets, Gil, like just a little bit surprised at some of the pricing. And obviously, it was a good example of what you did with the Braves last year. What was that? That was in August, middle of August, probably August. When you were
mid August or up to the end of September.
Yep. Like you brought up, as we led into this, how many divisions we have where there is a two game or less difference, and like I'm just Reds plus 210, you could get them at, right? You can get Guardians plus 220 with so many games remaining. It's just, it always feels to me like there's aggressive favorites set in these markets for some of these divisions where they're not leading by much.
Yeah, in the two divisions we're talking about today, the AL West and the AL East, though.
Yeah, like, not the case.
The AL West, like, I just don't buy the Angels, Mariners, certainly not the A's, right? They can't, right, mathematically. But the Angels and Mariners, I just don't buy them winning this division at a long shot price. I do think the Astros in plus money is still probably the play here. Am I racing to bet this? Full disclosure, I do not have a bet on it, but that would be my bet. AL East is obviously more interesting because top to bottom, it's the best division in all of baseball. The Yankees at the rear, I do not at all believe in the Yankees and that offense. Aaron Judge supposed to come back here in short order, finally, for the Yankees. But the Yankees are 8 out at the beginning of August. 2 months still. That's still a long way to go. But it's not just that they're 8 games behind the Orioles. And by the way, what a lovely thing to say for those of us who grew up loving the Orioles, that the Yankees are 8 back. But they got to get through the Red Sox and the Jays and the Rays. Talking about the division here, not the playoffs. I don't buy the Yankees making the postseason either, by the way. Though it should be mentioned, as ho-hum as they've been, they've hung around. Right, so it's not out of the possibility. But I just don't think Brian Cashman has done a good job. That's the understatement of the year, just filling out that lineup. Red Sox look frisky. The Blue Jays never seem to have pitching and hitting working at the same time this year. And their hitters have been, a disappointment in the scheme of things from previous years as well.
And then those odds just don't seem long enough.
And they don't seem long enough for the Blue Jays, right?
I mean, you're 4.5 back. There's a team in between you in these standings.
Yeah.
And then theoretically, you've still got two chasers that are in it with the Red Sox and Yankees.
I'm an Orioles guy. I love the Orioles. Grew up on the Orioles. I still think the Rays nip them at the stretch. Obviously, the Orioles and Rays right now, two teams here as the trade deadline approaches that are in super big need of starting pitching. We talked about how the Rays lost Springs and Rasmussen earlier this year. The Orioles, this is their weakness. But I don't think, like, for the Orioles, do you give up one of your top, their farm system is loaded. Do you give up one of your top 10 prospects for a Stroman type pitcher at this point? Maybe you do. But I don't know that you do because you're so set up for the future anyway.
Yeah.
But again, here's the issue. And I just got to stress this again. The difference in baseball is the NFL, you play 17 games and then it's a single elimination. Okay, I get it. But baseball, you play 162 and then you play a best of three, right? So it's, you know, let's take last year again. The Mets led the NL East all the way to the very end, and then the Braves housed them. And then they end up three games into the postseason, done. San Diego beats them 2-1. You're gone. See you later. So being a wild card matters hugely. Like, the difference between the Orioles and the Rays going 1-2 either way is massive, right? Because for the reason stated. So I don't know. Maybe you do make that trade at the end, but I still think the Rays, who were 30-9 and are 32-34 since, I still think they get there. But again, schedule, second hardest remaining schedule in baseball, 520 aggregate win percentage of opponents. If you buy into that kind of thing, I don't make that much of strength of schedule. But if you do, that's something to note as well. But the trade deadline's huge for these two.
The Orioles thing is fascinating because I think I actually, if I were in their shoes, I think I'd be buying for everything that you just laid out. Plus, I mean, in the past 20 years, how many times have we talked? Like, how
few
often,
and far
if you're the Baltimore Orioles, how often do you think you're going to get even an opportunity like this in this division?
Well, they're set up for glory coming up. Like, they're going to be good for a long time. That's the hope. They didn't. The tanking didn't work quite as efficiently for them as it did for the Astros. The Astros, you know, 2-3 years of tanking, then they ascend and they stay up top.
Yeah.
The Orioles, you know, they gave their fans a horrible product year after year after year, and now they're finally here. And this is a team, Kelly, this is before your time, but in the 70s and 80s, there was something called the Orioles way. They were one of the great franchises in all of baseball, winning World Series, getting to World Series. So, yes, to your point, maybe you do make that trade, but the Orioles are plus 135, the Rays are plus 135. As tight as this division is beyond that, I wouldn't bet the Jays, Red Sox, or Yankees. I just wouldn't. So is it sexy enough to bet the Rays at plus 135 or the Orioles at plus 135? I hate to do a whole segment and then say, no, not really, but kind of not really, at least for the division.
I'm going to give you one heads up.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Baltimore's doing all this. And Mountcastle still hasn't really started yet. He hasn't started hitting yet, yo.
Ryan Mountcastle, the official baseball player of Primetime Action. Every time we looked up at a screen, that dude was doing something outstanding. We'll come back. Let's talk some Women's World Cup. Paul Carr joins us. His thoughts on the games coming up. Some good games overnight. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football guide drops next week. Get previews and predictions for every Division I team and conference, best bets on futures and season win totals, plus an in-depth breakdown of how you can use our betting splits and power rankings to make you smarter, better this season. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount, $175, or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Remember, this offer ends July 31st, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to take advantage of these special offers and become part of the Sports Betting Network. We get tweets at Beatty the Book. This is from BitFlair. He said, tailed the Kepfer bet yesterday and turned it off when Evans had a triple match point in the second set. Didn't bother to check result, but happy to see my account. We had a win yesterday at tennis that was just from the depths of death.
Oh, you were finally on the right side of
it? Finally making up for all of those horrible tiebreaker losses. So we got one back yesterday on Dominic Kepfer. Bentley, I cannot get behind the weather person slander. Everyone seems to forget their job is predicting the future. Johnny Ringo, if sports bettors put up meteorologist-like percentages, they would go broke in under a month. And Neil Galbraith said, Gilly, you mentioned you like a new name for Washington football team as the Power with a fist on the helmet. Just wondering, how did you see that logo going? He's giving me options. Rick Olier, hypothetically, if Shohei gets traded to the NL, could he still win the AL MVP? Is his body of work between April and August not good enough for that? Well, this is something that we've tossed around behind the scenes for a while now. And up until about a week ago, I was like, I don't know if it's enough. There's still 2 months. You know, someone could get there. I never thought he was going to get traded, but I said, hypothetically, if he did, let's have that discussion. I don't even think, you know, if it's not going to happen now. We already know Tom Verducci said it won't, and it won't. But if it, let's just say in a hypothetical world, in a parallel universe, that he got traded tomorrow to an NL team, does what he has done thus far stand the rest of the way as MVP? I think it does. Like, I don't know.
All I know is that would be the most annoying sports conversation headline topic of every show for 2 months.
Oh, my God.
And I would want to rip my ears off. Todd, show it. Still win MVP.
Yeah. Todd Wishnev. Do you know Todd Wishnev, by the way, Kelly?
Where's he been at?
Are you familiar with Todd Wishnev? He said, this NFL Sunday ticket on YouTube is going to be a disaster, he said, for in-game. Which we knew. Double the DirecTV delays. He said, horrendous. Plus a... But I don't know, but here's the thing about the YouTube thing. We're in Vegas, Cox Cable. My YouTube TV is better than Cox Cable was in terms of in-game.
Yeah,
like, Cox Cable was the worst thing ever. So YouTube TV is actually an improvement here. But I hear you. All streaming. We always knew streaming in general. It's not just that, right? Streaming in general is going to be a nightmare for in-game. I will say this, Kelly. I did find, like, I had the DirecTV in San Francisco. I long ago got rid of DirecTV up there. But the cable here, it took me a long time to get rid of cable, and I went to the whole all streaming, and, you know, you're thinking to yourself, well, this is going to be a savings. Like, I'm tired of paying $300 for cable television. Let me go to this other option, and, oh, boy, the savings will come in. You know, man, when you do the math, the savings are so minimal. Because the cable company still charges you about a third of the price. You have to get the Wi-Fi. They have a monopoly on the Wi-Fi.
Right.
So let's say it's $300 that you pay every month. You're going to pay $100 in Wi-Fi. YouTube TV is going to get you almost two-thirds of the way there, right? Because all prices have gone up. And if you look at how prices of every streaming service has gone up over time, you're going to get a few of them, right? You're going to get the Maxes of the world or the Netflixes of the world. You end up saving a few bucks.
Yeah. The internet thing's just... Like, everybody can talk about the cord cutting, but, like, when they still own the internet. The cable companies still own the internet. They're going to jack up the price to whatever they want.
I know we're going to get a flood of tweets now, like, oh, this is what you should do, right? People have their own circumvented methods, so, yeah. Let's talk some soccer. Overnight at the Women's World Cup, first of all, Argentina and South Africa with a 2-2 banger yesterday. And then England 1-0 over Denmark. Nice job by Felica there. China 1-0 over Haiti. Nice job on the under from Felica there. I think he split the Argentina bets. He's doing very well. He does not join us today, but Paul Carr does, who's doing quite well as well from True Media Networks and, of course, the Expected Value podcast from Topeka, Kansas. How you doing, Paulie?
Hi, Gil. We do miss the cable days. I mean, I used to work at ESPN, so there was some bias there, but it was always like, look, this is a great deal and it's simple. It's expensive. It's both a lot of money and it's a really good deal, which is, you know, it's your old two things in your head at the same time thing. It's not the way it is now, though.
Not the way it is. And you know what? That genie's never getting back in that bottle. That's for sure. There's some good things about that, but also wanted to point out, those who think they're going to have massive savings, that ain't going to happen either.
Right. Maybe for a year.
Maybe. That's right. Maybe for a year. And you're like, I have 10 different subscriptions going at this point. All right, let's talk Women's World Cup. First of all, I never got a chance to talk to you on the show. U.S. team, how do you feel about them right now after the draw?
I'm more optimistic than I think most people are, or at least most online people. You know, there's a lot of doom and gloom coming out of that game, especially at halftime. I don't know. I mean, look, the U.S. outshot Netherlands 18-5, and I know shots are not everything. And the Dutch did control the midfield a lot, especially in that first half. But they had two shots in the first half, and the goal was on one that went between two players' legs through a whole crowd of players. I mean, it's just half chance that's going to go in sometimes. So I'm not too concerned. The only thing I thought was really weird is that they only use one sub. You're the deepest team in the world, and your forwards are clearly kind of, I mean, you're getting tired. You played 70 minutes. Like, put in a couple fresh forwards at the end of the game to really make a run at that Dutch back line. But other than that, I'm not too concerned.
Tomorrow, the same day where we have the greatest boxing match of the year, hopefully, and then a tremendous UFC card. We'll talk to Jordan Sherwood later about that. We also have four Women's World Cup soccer games. So this is the last leg of the group stage we're getting into?
Yep. This is tomorrow. Let's see. I think tomorrow's the end of the second ones.
Yeah.
And then it's four games a day. You get the simultaneous windows, which creates some fun drama for the next few days after that.
Oh, yeah. The simultaneous windows begin on Sunday, correct? It's always at the time zones. Yeah. So Sunday, super early morning. We're talking Saturday, starting early morning, coming up here tonight, in other words, stateside. So Sweden, Italy, France, Brazil, Panama, Jamaica, and Korea and Morocco. And of course, with all third legs, or this is the second leg. Once we get to
the second one.
Yeah, once we get to the third legs, it's going to be like, what do these teams really need to happen? So this is our last opportunity not to think about that for all of them, though that factors into all of these as well. Yeah. So what did you end up with these four?
I'll start with Italy, Sweden. I like Italy in this game. I have Italy on the double chance at plus 100. It's a little bit worse now. I'd play it down to like minus 110 or so. This is kind of a fade of Sweden, which they really didn't look very good against South Africa. I mean, they won the game 2-1. They came from behind, but they got one goal off a weird deflection. The other was off a corner. Sweden really didn't create anything except off corner kicks and set pieces. I think 11 of their 14 shots came from set pieces. So, you know, these are two fairly even teams, I think. Italy made the knockout stage to the last World Cup. On the women's side, they're kind of, you know, just slowly climbing the ladder. I just don't see Sweden winning this half the time. They're not as potent as they have been in recent years. So, yeah, Italy double chance, or Italy plus half a goal, however you want to find it at your book, plus 100 at the price I got.
And then you like Brazil as a dog against France.
Yeah, so Brazil's always been... You know, they've had as much attacking talent as anybody, and the defense has been questionable. That's kind of the stereotype on the women's side. And it's still kind of true. They've got tons of attacking talent. Ari Borges had a hat trick in the opening game. I mean, Marta is really more of a bench player and an inspiration player just because she's 37 and this is her sixth World Cup. The question's always been defense. And now their manager is Pia Sundhage, who might be familiar to even casual fans. She managed the U.S. for a while, to a couple gold medals, runner-up finished the 11 World Cup. And she's one of the great tacticians in the sport. And so she has the ability, I think, to kind of get this defense together somewhat. So I combine that with France's really kind of scuffling offensively. They really didn't create a whole lot of really good chances against Jamaica. And they've got several attackers who are injured. Their best defender is injured. Wendy Renard, who may be the best defender in the world, probably won't play because of a calf injury. So France is kind of on the ropes in a lot of different ways. And I think this Brazil team is just a little more together than some of the past few years. So I like Brazil to win this one outright at plus 175.
All right. Those are your two plays. No other plays and any others?
Nope. That's all I got so far.
All right. Let me ask you this on our way out, because we have a minute left. You're a big Dolphins guy. We just got word Jalen Ramsey undergoing surgery yesterday. We found this out. He's going to undergo surgery on the meniscus in his left knee, expected to miss the start of the regular season. That per Adam Schefter, wasn't immediately known exactly how long he'll be sidelined, but one source telling Schefter he could miss a few months, quote unquote. That's not good for a big defensive acquisition for the Dolphins. Where do you stand? We were doing the AFC East yesterday, and we did come to the conclusion, though, that it feels like they might be the overlooked team in some ways.
I mean, I feel like they're kind of where they were last year, just a little bit more confidence about what Mike McDaniel can do with his offense. We've seen it. It's great. So I think you can, I was looking at their numbers the other day. I think you can get them at plus money to make the playoffs, which is probably the way I lean, or right around there. You know, mm-hmm. I think I'd rather go playoffs rather than, I think, over 9.5 wins, which would pay a little bit less. It seems like they're in a pretty good spot. The offense really should be better. I mean, the O-line was awful last year. It can't be worse. So, I mean, there's always the Tua asterisk of everything, that how many games is he going to play?
Yeah.
But even without him last year, they weren't awful. So,
you a Tua guy in the end?
Playoffs is decent.
Or do you consider yourself a Tua guy?
I mean, the biggest issue is health.
Yeah.
But generally, I would say yes in this McDaniel offense.
Okay. Paul Carr, everybody. Good luck with the bets, man.
All right.
Paul Carr at Paul Carr, C-A-R-R on Twitter, from True Media Networks and the Expected Value Podcast. Jason Weingarten joins us from under a cloud of smoke. His baseball plays of the day and beyond. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You can place a no-run first-inning wager with confidence at BetMGM. Make a no-run first-inning prop bet on any Friday MLB game. And if only one run is scored in the first, you'll get your stake back in bonus bets up to $20. Take big swings all season long with BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, and an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Log into your account or sign up with BetMGM today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and over to wager. New and existing customer offer. Opt opt-in required. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Offer not available in D.C., Kansas, Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Kelly Bidlin, whose frontage in his mouth represents his success.
Boom! Can't believe you just dropped the line perfectly.
Kelly also wants to ask Jason a question about whether Shohei would still be MVP if he got traded. So let's bring Jason in right now. Jason Weingarten, ladies and gentlemen, from under a cloud of smoke at Spreadopedia on the old Twitter machine. How you doing, Jason?
Good morning. How's it going?
Going very well. I'm just joking. Kelly was like lament. He was not lamenting. He was like just imagining how annoying it would be that if Shohei had gotten traded, if what he had done statistically on the baseball field would have been enough. Like the fact that every sports talk radio, right, station would have been talking that, has he done enough to win the AL MVP? But just out of curiosity, would he have done enough?
I mean, it's hard to talk about it because it's like we just take for granted at this point that he puts up historical numbers like yesterday, threw a complete game shutout, hit two home runs.
It's amazing.
And we're just like, okay, whatever. That's nice. You know,
exactly.
Not, oh, wow, that's the greatest thing we've seen in our lifetimes on a baseball diamond.
It's exactly why I spent 5 minutes on it today, because I just refuse to let it normalize for people. Like, it's just unbelievable. And we're like, yeah, Shohei. It's amazing.
And it's like, I'm writing something for VSiN yesterday. I had to go back and change it like three times because every, you know, I write about Ohtani a lot. I call it the Ohtani section just because you're going to have to write about Ohtani if you're writing about futures. But I start writing yesterday. Oh, he's pitching a complete game. Okay, he's probably going to pitch a complete game. I'll keep that in there. Oh, he hit a home run. Oh, he hit another home run.
Yeah,
every
incredible.
Time I just got to go back and revise it.
It's
hard to write about him when he continues to put the benchmark even higher.
So, yes, he would have done enough?
Yes. I just want to say one more thing about Ohtani. My last article I wrote about 2 weeks ago now, I mentioned that the over 62.5 home runs for Ohtani to break Judge's AL record was 35-1. I thought that was a really good number. In case you're wondering, it's down to 750 at FanDuel now.
Oh, boy. There's also, I saw popping up, Ohtani Triple Crown props. Have you seen this?
I have not. Is he in the? I have not noticed his Triple Crown numbers. Is that a possibility?
Well, he leads the American League leads the whole majors in homers, obviously, with 38. He leads the American League. No, that is not correct. He is four behind Adolis Garcia in RBI. Adolis Garcia has 84. He has 80. And then when it comes to batting average, obviously, Arias leads the majors, but the American League lead for batting average is Yandy Diaz at 318, and Shohei is hitting, what's Shohei's number?
298. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you go, and let me just do this on the fly here and I see if it's still up, because I did see it yesterday for the first time at William Hill when we were looking at adjusted season win totals, but there was a Shohei Triple Crown prop, which I am not seeing up now, but it did appear for the first time. And so, yeah, even that is sort of making its way. The thing with the 62.5 home runs is I keep making this joke because I was so annoyed by the fact that, you know, all Yankees fans are like, oh, he's setting the major league home run record, you know, as if Barry Bonds didn't hit 73, right? I wonder if those same people will treat a Shohei run the same way. Of course they won't, right? But, that's how ridiculous that narrative was last year. But that's the kind of air we're talking about. And, oh, by the way, he's probably like sixth in the Cy Young market.
Yeah, I have him like fifth or something right now. He's 25-1 still. His next start's coming at Atlanta. So if he has a big start, you know, it's probably going to be on TV. If I'm, you know, I'm pretty sure one way or the other it should be a national broadcast. But if he pitches well in that game, you should see that number probably get back in the 12 range.
Las Vegas, Chris, what's it called if you win the Triple Crown and you have the most wins? I believe that's called the Quadruple Crown. I think we should make that up right now.
I think they just give you every award.
They bestow you with every award. What is the best? I asked this of Borchard yesterday or the other day. I'll ask this of you. What's the best season-long bet? Or I probably asked you the same too here. What is it right now, just for those who missed you the other day?
Well, you got some Ohtani numbers out there. 25-1 and Cy Young is fairly compelling. I just don't think, like, when you look up, like, Gerrit Cole's numbers, Shane McClanahan, Gausman, they're all good. But, like, none of them are guaranteed to win the Cy Young at this point with, mm-hmm. you know, 60 games or so left in the season. I think Spencer Strider is a much more interesting bet. He's going to hit most likely 300-plus strikeouts. So, you know, like, even if he has a three and a half ERA, are we going to look at the guy with 300 strikeouts and say, oh, no, he's not the Cy Young. This other guy is for some other reason. We're going to – it's not 1989 anymore. You know, we're not giving Nolan Ryan Cy Young with 300 strikeouts.
Nolan Ryan, who in one of the more amazing things in baseball history, never won a Cy Young. The guy who has
he should have won a Cy Young a year. He led MLB in strikeouts and lost to a closer, Cam Bedrosian's dad, Steve Bedrosian. That's insane. Would happen.
Most no-hitters career, most one-hitters in the history of baseball, most two-hitters in the history of baseball. Never a Cy.
We've also started to see some movement finally in the AL Rookie of the Year. Gunnar Henderson mm-hmm. jumped ahead of Josh Young. It's kind of a three-way race, depending on where you look. Some books have Henderson favored. Some books have Yoshida favored. I'm a little interested in Yoshida at 3-1. I saw Bookmaker had him at 3-1 this week. I'm on Henderson. I lose to Young. I just don't think... I don't think Young's going to win it in the end. I think he gets rewarded for his good season by being on the All-Star team. But I think Yoshida and Henderson are likely duking this out for Rookie of the Year.
If I said, Jason, you must make a division bet in any of baseball's six divisions right now, that bet would be what?
In a division? I mean, you're starting to see more separation. I still like the Guardians, but they're just not getting it done. It's not like they're doing anything.
Yep.
They're not doing anything to excite me. It's not like Noah Syndergaard is an improvement. I'd have to go with one of the short dogs, either Baltimore, like +135, Astros +115. I do think the Astros are going to overtake the Rangers, especially when you consider they've gotten almost nothing out of Altuve and Yordan Alvarez, and they get to add those guys down the stretch. That's almost like, you know, adding somebody on the you know, at the trade deadline, getting two guys like that back. So I'd probably go with the Astros. I don't think the Reds are gonna do it when all is said and done either. And I think the Dodgers have kind of opened up that division in the last 2 weeks or so.
Oh, how dare you. Giants 3-back, Diamondbacks 4-back. We shall see. But I'm with
you. It's close. It's close, but you really think they're going to take on the Dodgers? I don't know.
I don't know. I think the Giants end up in the postseason. I don't know if they'd win the division or not. I have a division bet on them, so I'm hoping, but I think they end up in the postseason. But I'm with
how
you.
How about the Padres? The Padres to make the playoffs, actually.
That was my question. Real quick, what are your baseball plays of the day? Because I want to ask you a Padres question on the way out. But real quick, what are your baseball plays?
Yeah, I got a couple plays today. I'll go through them real quick for you. Twins -162 against the Royals. Baltimore +112. I like that one a lot. Phillies -156. Brewers +153. And then Angels +171. I don't love that game. I don't love betting on the Angels, but that is a really good number for this team. Got to take that today.
All right. I like that. That was more than a couple. All right. So then the question is, because, you know, I never thought Shohei would get traded. He's not. I also never thought that the Padres would consider trading Snell and Hader, despite all the numbers, despite all the news that you hear that, well, they're listening to offers. Even Juan Soto, they say they're listening to offers about. You sound like you agree with me that I can't imagine the Padres are going to just go about face on this. They were all in this year. They were supposed to be great. With 55, 60 games left, they're still not going to try to do something this year? They're going to trade? Snell?
I get the sense at this point that they have these four superstars, but I get the sense that they're probably not particularly close friends off the field. Like, it just doesn't seem like they're gelling as a team. Mm. But when you look at, you know, like run differential, and obviously run differential isn't the be-all end-all, but Braves, first place in the NL. Dodgers, second place in the NL. That's 140, 197 runs. The third place team is the Cubs. Fourth place is the Padres at 51. Cubs at 55. Next best team is the Giants, 23. So it's like again, run differential, not the be-all, end-all, but we know they're a good team.
Yeah, we do.
A lot of time left. A lot of time left for them to turn it around.
I agree. Jason got a run. Appreciate it, as always.
Talk to you later.
Jason, always fun. Jason Weingartner, at Weingarten, I should say, at Spreadopedia.